This coming Shabbos is going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Miketz. Parshas Miketz is a fundamental parsha because it teaches us how Yosef handles growing and the beginning of the process of the brothers reconnecting to him. And so the Pasuk first begins with the dreams of Paro, the leader of Egypt, who has two dreams, and he wakes up. He wakes up in the morning, and he is distressed. Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal notes that when we learn this section of the Torah without the context, we try to figure out, Paro, why don't you just shake off a bad dream? After all, the Chazon Ish tells us that that's what we should do when we have bad dreams. He says if everybody's always running to the opportunity to fast the Tainus Chalom, he himself would be fasting all the time. He has bad dreams all the time. So why does Paro allow himself to be affected the way that he did? So Rashab explains that in the normal course of events, we hold, certainly in Egypt, Paro, as a leader, felt that the strong defeat the weak. And so as the leader of the strongest nation at the time, if Paro had any dream on a global level that upset this prevailing philosophy, then he had a cause for alarm, for he was clearly unprepared for some sort of rebellion or attack that seems to be coming up in his own head. And the rebellion came from someone who was weaker than he, and thus Paro calls the leadership together in order to go over the context and make sure that the nation was safe. But of course, none of the people who came along to provide the advice could see the situation in the global way that he did. And thus, Bati Poem Rucho. Rav Schwab happens to add that it's no surprise that Parshas Miketz is always read when we highlight this idea, Gibor Biat Chalashim. That's not only something that was seen in Egypt, it certainly was something that was seen in the Jewish nation at the time of Hanukkah. The Torah continues that Yosef becomes the leader, and he gets a wife, and he has kids, and the famine began, and Yosef had created the economic system, and everybody else starts heading down to Egypt, including Yosef's brothers. And when they find themselves standing in front of the viceroy, we read, Vayakir Yosef es echav vehem lo hikiruhu. Yosef recognizes his brothers, but they don't recognize him. Now, how could it be that the brothers didn't recognize Yosef? So Rashi explains that it was because Yosef had a zakan, he had a beard. So Rav Avram Rivlin Shlita, the former mashgiach of Karmi Yavne, explains that Yosef realized that he was sold as a result of his lashon hara and his lording power over his family. However, Yosef learned from the experience, and Yosef did tshuva. In essence, he became more of a tzaddik, hence the new beard. The brothers didn't have the chance to complete the tshuva process. They didn't know Yosef was still alive. And so therefore, Yosef was able to see they were the same, but they could not see him as a totally different person. So the pasuk continues, Vayizkor Yosef es achalomos asher chalam lahem. Yosef recalled the dreams at that time. Now Rav Gifter Zatzal noted that until Yosef's brothers came to him, he had forgotten about the dreams. In other words, he didn't think that his ascendance to the throne was about himself. It was about the opportunity to help a needy country. But how could he forget a nevuah? A kovish nevuasa was a very serious matter in halacha. After all, the dreams were a prophecy, they were a nevuah. So Rav Gifter Zatzal explains that Yosef thought he had been mistaken about the dreams, and that the brothers were indeed correct. It was only when he saw them fulfilling the dreams, only then did he begin to reconsider maybe he wasn't wrong in the first place. Now, the Pesukim continue and highlight to us that the brothers have their rough experience with Yosef, with Tzavdas Paneach. Shimon gets taken into prison. The other brothers are sent back to Yaakov and asked to bring their brother Binyamin down. And then the brothers come back to Yaakov. They run out of food, and Yaakov now has the responsibility of telling them to go back down. Yaakov is terrified. Reuven tries to step in. Yehuda steps in. And then Yaakov turns around and he declares, Chumi Zimras Aretz. Okay, you're going to go. So if you're going to go, take from the Zimras Aretz, the praise of the land. And he tells him to take some crops and some nuts and whatever the case may be, things that would be impressive. So what's meant with the word Zimras Aretz? Zimra is a sense of praise. Says Rav Nachman of Breslov, the word Zimra, that which is praised, seems to be in terms of song. No two shepherds have the same tune. Says Rav Nachman, each creates his own tune based on his place, his flock, and his location. And the same was Yaakov's intent when connecting to the viceroy. He wanted to share his story so that Tzavdas Panech, the viceroy of Egypt, not hold him accountable for taking money or stealing the culture from Egypt. Noted journalist and Melamedes Torah, Sivan Rahab Meir, adds that this is one of the most important lessons of life, to recognize and appreciate our unique perspective and story, and to create the stories for our own families and heritage that will keep future generations connected to us as well. The pasuk continues that when Yosef finally sees the brothers again, he asks them, "Hashalom avichem hazaken, asher amartem ha'udenu chai, is your father well? Is he still alive?" But shouldn't the order of the questions have been reversed? Shouldn't Yosef have asked first if Yaakov was alive, and then afterwards only ask, "Is he well?" That's just the normal course of events. If he's well, then we assume he is alive. Sir Moshe Feinstein explains that Yosef was not asking about Yaakov's physical state of mind, but rather, he was asking about Yaakov's outlook on life. Was he well and at peace, or did he develop a pessimistic attitude towards humanity and towards the world after losing Yosef? Or perhaps, no, he had anchored himself in the vibrance towards his mission, just as he did before. Sometimes in life we go through rough times, and we're worried. We get cynical, we get shut down, we don't think that we're going to be able to overcome. And at that moment in time, our job is to wake up and to anchor ourselves in what we're doing. Forget about everyone, what everyone else is telling us. Keep us focused on the mission. When the brothers were down in Egypt, so that night they ate with Yosef. They prepared the food. They got drunk. They drank and got drunk with him. And Rashi noted that they hadn't had any wine from the time that Yosef was sold. But if Yosef was wrong and deserved to be sold, why did they mourn? So Rav Elia Lopian explains that even though someone is determined to be a rodef whose death is necessary, it doesn't mean that the people rejoice in the situation. It's similar to the predicament that Bnei Yisrael had with Achan. What happened? Achan deserved death, but Bnei Yisrael came along to offer solace together with him so that he should be able to handle the situation. When the brothers wind up going up to Israel, they get chased by the individual who comes to seek out, did they take the viceroy's cup? And the pasuk says, "Vayechapes v'gadol eichelu v'katon kila." They checked at the beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. And Rabbi Shulayb Diskin notes and quotes a medrash that seems to suggest that they only checked two bags. The two bags belonged to Shimon and Binyamin. Why? Because the others argued that they had a cheskas kashrus; they could be trusted since they brought down the money that was set aside to them by mistake. But Shimon and Binyamin were not given extra money. And this, said Rabbi Yeshua Leib, was the meaning of the pasuk. They started with the oldest, Shimon, who is the oldest of the two, and they ended with the youngest, Binyamin. So Rav Shechter would often tell us, when he would tell over a vort like this, that this was a novel level of interpretation, but he didn't know where the medrash existed, and certainly didn't think that that was pshat in the pasuk. It contrasts well with the comment on the Haftorah that Rav Shechter used to mention to us. Pasuk says, "Hinei aleven achas shiva inayim," that on one stone there'll be seven eyes. And we asked Rav Shechter, is it permissible to use the pasuk in the context that was not the way that it was intended? So Rav Shechter told us that the story of the Marival, Rav Marival was blind in one eye, and he was resting on a stone with three of his students. And one turned and quoted the fact to the Rebbe that this is a kiyum of aleven achas shiva inayim, that, take a look, on this stone there are seven eyes. Each of us has two eyes, we're three students, that makes six, and you are blind in one eye, but you are the one who sees with one. When things are a melitza, though, there's room to offer a novel example without concern for kfira. Others disagree. Others feel that you can't go ahead and just make jokes out of the Torah, or use it for your own style. Rav Shechter warned us to be careful not to turn things into kfira, but also to have a certain sense of ability to see world events and situations guided by the words of the Torah, and of course of our Nevi'im as well. Chanukah is an opportunity for us to rededicate ourselves, and may we appreciate the light of the Torah in our lives, and may we all merit it as well. Shabbat Shalom to all.